Welcome to the Behaviorist Book Club. My name is Matt Harrington. I am your host, and we are going to be talking all about ABA research. In this podcast, we break down one ABA research article per episode, taking out the key findings for you so that on your morning commute or on your way into work, you can become a better behavior analyst. Now, let's get to the show. Hello and welcome to the Behaviorist Book Club. My name is Matt and we are continuing our essential readings article and we are going to an article about training, supervision, and family guidance. So this article is by LeBrant and colleagues, a component analysis of behavioral skills training for effective instruction delivery. This is a classic. All of these articles are classic. I say this every single episode, but I really do like this one, especially because it cuts out a bunch of crap. It cuts out all the things that don't actually contribute to an effective family guidance session. And it puts in what actually can help, not only working with caregivers, but also your trainee, or also an employee or a supervisor. It essentially talks about behavioral skills training and giving effective feedback that actually ends up changing a behavior. And this is, once again, not something new, right? This is published in 2018. This is something that OBM has been studying for years. BST is definitely not a new concept, nor is a component analysis of BST. But the reason I like it so much, the reason I chose to keep it in here, is because it is a great example of, one, a component analysis and how we can trim the fat on interventions, because a lot of interventions these days, I think, have a lot of fat, as well as a great article that talks about practicality, right? You don't have time for steps 1 through 9 for every single situation. So instead, just use step 3. And step 3 is going to get you 90% of the way there. And if step 3 doesn't work, then go to step 7. And that's what we're going to get here. This article is all about behavioral skills training. Behavioral skills training is a package. It consists of instruction, modeling, rehearsal, and feedback. And that package is typically delivered all together. So instead of analyzing, for example, modeling, you're analyzing the effects of modeling, rehearsal, instructions, and feedback all in one component. And the reason why it's done like this and the reason why BST was developed in this way is because originally when the meta-analyses and the different experimental analyses were coming together to perform a treatment package, they did the same thing, but in reverse. They said modeling works and instructions work and rehearsal and feedback, and they all work. What if we put them together? Could we get somebody from 0 to 100% at a higher probability than just modeling alone, than just feedback alone? And they found that yes, if you arrange it in instruction, modeling, rehearsal, and then feedback, you're able to have a higher probability of success. And that was where behavioral skills training originated from and eventually has morphed into kind of final boss of supervision training and caregiver training that it is today. However, in recent years, as behavior analysts get pushed to do more and more things and have less time for the parts of the job that most of us actually enjoy, which is, of course, the client-facing and the parent-facing stuff, we've had to be more practical about what is needed for training. Why is it that we don't have instructions, modeling, rehearsal, and feedback an organic chemistry college class? We only have really instruction there, maybe a little bit of modeling, right? But there's still learning that happens. Now, one could always argue, right, it's as much learning as BST, right? You might get 50% learning with instructions and modeling and 100% learning with BST. And then we say, all right, obviously we wouldn't just want instructions and modeling, but what if there was something that could get us 95% of the way there for half the time? What if we just did rehearsal and feedback? If rehearsal and feedback got you 95% of the way there, would instruction and modeling be important? Would that last 5% really move the needle on the overall effects of the intervention? In most cases, the answer is going to be no. 100% is great, but life isn't 100%. The variability that naturally occurs in day-to-day life means that our learners aren't going to have interventions that happen the exact same every single time. So that 5% probably isn't that big of a deal. And therefore, the client would be better served if you focused on other aspects of their training, such as additional generalization and steps from there. And that is the core of what this article talks about. how far can we get with the really important BST components? And can we get rid of the rest? Not to completely replace BST and chuck it out the window, but instead to get as close as possible to what we need. And once we're there, can we then focus on other things? So if you could isolate what actually drives the change that saves time, improves training, and boosts buy-in for busy families, it makes ABA more accessible regardless of who you're working with. So we're going to conduct the component analysis of BST in this article to identify which elements are necessary or sufficient to teach parents how to use effective instruction delivery, a powerful strategy when working with kids. Now, this article was in 2018. Of course, the effective instruction delivery, it could be a range of any other different topics. It could be a variety of different things to talk about. Essentially, the thing to focus on here is that could we increase fidelity to X behavior program while giving them X component of BST? So we had 11 participants in the study. The authors were working, of course, with the caregivers. So the behavior that was being targeted to teach was that effective instruction delivery. It was 7 different component steps, all with objective things to observe and mark as correct or incorrect. So what happened? First, there was an experiment 1 where we randomized the component order to see which was going to immediately jump results and which was going to not. And then experiment 2, feedback was always used last to test if other gains were made for other reasons and specific other components. 80 CEUs, $10 a month, 3 to 5 new CEUs being added every single month. Straightforward, simple, that's CEU streamlined. I created the Netflix of CEUs with all of not only my old content, but 3 to 5 new hours of CEUs being added every single month. Right now, we're at 85 videos and climbing more and more with over 400 behavior analysts getting all the CEUs they could dream about for only $10 a month. So if you're interested, go ahead and go to behavioristbookclub.com and click the link that says Streamline Info or check the link below this episode. I know that you will love it, and I guarantee you that you will get all the CEUs you need at, finally, an affordable price. So what they found was that for experiment 1, where it was randomized order, for 5 out of 8 of the participants, feedback was the thing that worked the best. Now, this is where I always have to say we saw this coming. Feedback was always bound to be the thing that worked best. Feedback that is in the moment and clear, descriptive, and it provides an opportunity for the person to change their behavior and try again is the alpha of all intervention techniques, right? Anything we do, whether it be reinforcement with tokens or giving positive praise or all of these different things, is essentially just feedback. And of course, feedback was going to be the thing that produced the highest amount of change in the most amount of people. Participants did show gradual improvements across multiple phases, but feedback was the only component that produced consistent, significant, and stable gains. Experiment 2, where feedback was always last, three participants showed improvement, but really only after feedback was introduced. Everyone else got modest gains everywhere, with feedback being the primary tool that was used to get them up to mastery. So IOA, procedural integrity, all the extra components were good. Essentially, we're saying feedback was the part of behavioral skills training that produced the highest change in behavior. So, key takeaways as we finish this article. The feedback is the MVP. Feedback's the one that is going to increase the behavior of the person you're working with. Now, I think it's important here to think about this a little bit logically as somebody who does trainings, right? So you meet with a family, you say, all right, here's the intervention, here's FCT, go ahead and get started. I'm going to just give you feedback. That person's probably not going to feel super confident, right? They're going to be like, what the hell are you, what's FCT? I don't even know what you're talking about. So there's probably going to be some instruction aspect to it. There's probably going to be some breakdown of, I'm going to do this and then this. All right, now go ahead and try. And in my experience, when it's a little bit more challenging or the intervention is a little more complex, there's also probably going to be modeling. And it's not because modeling is going to bleed into tons and tons of really positive gains in skill acquisition. And it's not because modeling is going to lead to all these amazing gains in skill acquisition. It's more so just because it's a confidence thing, right? Once you hear something and you see something, then you can feel more comfortable actually doing it. So in reality, I don't think feedback can just be applied in a vacuum because it is the only successful component. What I would instead consider is that there's going to be an amount of time you spend for each component. You're probably going to have some instruction, some modeling, maybe some rehearsal. I don't use rehearsal as much. I typically do just go straight to feedback after that. And then finally, some feedback. Let's say you have an hour session to work with a caregiver. What this study is suggesting, and the results of this study, is that instead of spending 30% on instruction, 30% on modeling, and 30% on feedback, instead maybe focus 70% on feedback, 10% on modeling, 20% on instruction. So just weight your time spent on the things that actually work the best, specifically the feedback. BST in a time crunch can really only have that instruction plus feedback component, and you're going to get good results. Wrapping this up, when it comes to BST, BST still stands as the primary training tool, in my opinion, for teaching caregivers especially. However, when you're low on time or when you're trying to be efficient or getting a lot of buy-in, start with quick instructions, a little bit of modeling, and then go straight into clear and direct feedback. That's going to get you the most bang for your buck and ultimately make your caregiver the most competent with the thing that you're teaching them, thus giving them and their clients, their children, amazing outcomes. All right, everyone. I hope you have a great weekend ahead of you. That was another 3 in the Essential Reading Series, and we'll be back with more next week. See you then. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. I hope you learned something, and I hope you continue to learn something as you tune in Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays to the Behaviorist Book Club. If you liked this episode, consider leaving us a review, sharing it with a friend, and most importantly, using it in your clinical practice. There's no other reason why I do this than to make you a better behavior analyst and to make myself a better clinician. See you in the next one.